Welcome, everybody. I am Maggie Dawn, and you are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on Civic Media. Hope you've downloaded the new app. It is spiffy and cool. You can one-button text or call the show, and I will actually be able to see it if you text. Super cool. I am also now finally streaming live video if you want to watch me talk. I mean, that's... I've been told that I should never play Poker Evan because my face says exactly what I'm thinking all the time.
You gotta wear the sunglasses. Big sunglasses.
Huge sunglasses, a hoodie. Goes the now deceased Unabomber. There's actually a pro poker player that's called the Unabomber. I'm not actually being totally glib about Ted Kaczynski. But yeah, we're now streaming live on YouTube and Facebook. You can look me up on Facebook. I believe it's Maggie Dawn Show. On Twitter, The Maggie Dawn Show. You can always email me, maggie.dawn@civicmedia.us. And while it sounds like Dawn of the Resistance, it is spelled D-A-U-N, so check that one out when you go looking for me on the socials. So I thought we would start someplace kind of fun today, Evan, because it's been a bit of a heavy week of news, I should say. And the place that I wanted to start, I believe this news sort of started breaking maybe yesterday and then was confirmed a little bit later on in the evening. And that is that Elon Musk, Twitter in chief.
We can't move on from that. Too quickly. Tweeter in chief. I love it.
Tweeter in chief. Yes. Also resident jerk in chief. Apparently.
Got in.
I mean, this guy sounds like the boss that everyone would hate. Like no matter what you think of Elon Musk or what he's doing with Twitter, no one would ever want to work for this person. Am I wrong? I mean, just awful.
It does
awful.
Sound truly terrible. I mean, people really passionate about their jobs. There been there for years and years and years. To sort of be uprooted like that. It sounded really unpleasant.
You're fired, and then, oops, we fired too many people and the platform might collapse. Please come back. You can join our convo this Thursday talkback at 844-967-2789. I'm going to tell you what news about Elon I'm talking about in just a second. But if you want to tell me what you wanted to scream at the TV or radio when you heard something this week on the news, give me a call. Phone lines are open, 844-967-2789. We can talk about what you wanted to talk back at your radio or TV about this week, because there was a lot of it. But getting back to everyone's favorite boss, jerk-in-chief, Twitter-in-chief, tweeter-in-chief, Elon Musk. Apparently, he threw down on Twitter with Mark Zuckerberg, CEO of Facebook, now Meta, whatever that means. And challenged him, I guess, to like an actual MMA fight, or was it just boxing? I wasn't able to follow it super closely. But yeah, Musk sort of calls out his social media rival, billionaire rivals. I love it when billionaires decide to sort of go after each other. Always makes for some fun moments. And indeed, this is one of them. So Elon Musk calls out Mark Zuckerberg on Twitter and says, "Why don't you fight me?" And Mark responds and is like, "Where are we going?"
Oh, I'd love it. Oh, I'd love it.
Literally said location, which is sort of apparently amongst the children these days when somebody throws down and you're like, where are we going? I'm ready. Let's do it. That's kind of your super sauce there. So turns out this wasn't just these two guys going off. Dana White was actually interviewed by TMZ Sports. Dana White is this, I'm just going to say it, dirtbag that runs MMA, the one that everybody buys on TV and that earns all the money. I could do a whole show on Dana White and the MMA and their stupid weight classes and how sick they make their athletes and how underpaid they make their athletes. That is a racket if I ever saw one. But anyways, Dana White's the guy that runs all this crazy business. And apparently told...
It is a racket.
Completely.
It's wild.
Completely. I mean,
just Google him. Look up some of the stuff, some of the scandals he's been involved with. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, dirt bag. You look that up in the dictionary. There's Dana White. So TMZ calls up Dana White and says, "What do you know about the Musk v. Zuck throwdown?" And he tells them this, quote, talked with Mark and Elon last night. Both guys are absolutely dead serious about this because they both said, yeah, we'll do it. They both want to do it. Mark Zuckerberg hit me up first and he said, is he serious?
This cannot be real. It cannot be real.
Yes, this is the Dana White quoting to TMZ. Mark Zuckerberg hit me up first and he said, is he serious? And I told him, I don't know. Let me ask him. Then I asked Elon and he said, yeah, I'm dead serious. So then this is Dana White's commentary. This would be the biggest fight ever in the history of the world, bigger than anything that's ever been done. Kind of sounds like you know who, doesn't he? It would break all pay-per-view records. These guys would raise hundreds of millions of dollars for charity, and you don't have to even be a fight fan to be interested in it. Everyone would want to see it. The biggest fight of all time was Floyd Mayweather and Conor O'Brien. I just think this triples that. It triples what that did. There's no limit on what that thing can make. So they're talking about actually scheduling this fight in Vegas, and I thought, okay, dad bod Musk and like little puny Zuckerberg. I thought, man, this just by, you know, sheer weight, I thought the Zuck is gonna get crushed.
And I'm calling it right now. Like the board of directors or whatever of Tesla and Meta, they're not gonna let this happen. They're gonna like, oh, sorry, we can't fight. You know, the board said we couldn't do
it. Oh, I'm sure they'll sort something out. Yep. They're not going to let these guys act. There'll be ground rules. They can't actually kill one another. But I'm curious, 844-967-2789. Who do you think comes out on top? I my immediate thought was, oh, Mark, you're toast. Dad bod's just going to shear. All he has to do is land one decent punch with a little bit of the chub behind him.
But skinny guys fight till they're burger. I mean,
well,
you know?
Yes. And doesn't Mark Zuckerberg, he's got that CEO, that weird tech CEO, like I don't blank stare into space.
Throw you zone off. Out thing? Throw you off before the match.
Absolutely. And I figure I can see Zuck being one of those guys that literally like goes nuts and won't stop unless he's actually dead.
Especially if you're not a trained fighter. Like people don't realize like untrained fighters can be extremely dangerous because they don't know when
so to messy.
Yeah.
So messy. Well, turns out funny that you mentioned that, Evan, and no, if you're listening at home, Evan and I did not plan that. Funny that you mentioned that because I did a little digging. Turns out Mark Zuckerberg is a huge MMA fan, and he's been training. He's been taking Brazilian jiu-jitsu and MMA grappling classes.
Oh, my.
I mean, what? And this isn't just like, oh, I heard it was a cool workout, so I went and did this. He actually competed in a professional Brazilian jiu-jitsu tournament.
Oh, I'd have paid to see it. I would have.
And he won a medal.
Wow. He paid for the medal. Yeah, come on.
Right? I mean, maybe he did, but I don't know too many folks that do Brazilian jiu-jitsu with any degree of seriousness that would just hand out participation awards. I just don't. It's not part of that sport culture. This is Maggie fun fact. Way back in the day when I lived in New York, I wasn't playing rugby anymore, so I had a wee bit of stress and energy to get rid of, Evan. So I walked into my gym one day and saw a whole bunch of people doing kickboxing and was like, that looks cool workout, but I don't do classes because their chicks get weirdly competitive. I don't know why. I'm also 6 feet tall and I'm like, I don't actually want to fight you. So I asked the guy if he would train me just one-on-one. So I ended up doing Muay Thai training for like 3 years, did some pretty serious sparring. So that was kind of in my fun time. So you'll never see me endorsing MMA, stand-up fighting only.
And I've never been in a fight to begin with, so I'm right there with you.
I love that. That's a great thing. We should give medals out for that. Have you never been in a fight? You get an award.
I don't know. It's just dangerous. I know a kid that ended up in the hospital for, it was like 10 or 11 days. He got hit in the jaw, got an infection. I mean, he almost died. And there was just, you know, some squabble in the McDonald's parking lot. It's dangerous.
Terrible. Yeah, I don't recommend it. But boy, that I thought working out for rugby was hard. And then I tried to box and then I tried to kickbox. Those were the only times I ever actually like lost my lunch at a training session was the boxing training for real. But anyways, I was firmly in the Elon's going to kick Mark's butt camp. And then I found out that apparently Mark Zuckerberg is now a fitness junkie and a Brazilian jiu-jitsu medal winner. at a professional Brazilian jiu-jitsu tournament. So I say, schedule this up ASAP. Boy, is that going to be a foil for everything that's going on in our country, don't you think?
A little bit of, you know, some publicity behind it, too.
A wee bit. I mean, I have never paid for a professional boxing match or any of the MMA stuff because I think the whole setup is not good and exploits fighters. And I've never wanted to sort of put my money towards that effort.
That's right.
But this one, holy cow.
It does feel different, doesn't it?
Yes. First of all, it's billionaires fighting. So on that basis alone, that sounds like an attractive way to spend an afternoon. Second of all, it's Elon Musk, one of the single most annoying human beings on the planet, probably followed a close second by the guy that invented Facebook, which has taken us down this terrible rabbit hole of misinformation and Russian election interference and all of this nonsense, right? So he kind of bugs me too. And those two guys that are really annoying and super rich are going to fight each other?
Just the hubris. I mean, there's something here. There's something here.
And then you layer on top of it the whole political thing, right? Because Musk is sort of a darling of the right. DeSantis went on to the Twitter for arguably the worst presidential campaign rollout in the history of presidential campaign rollouts. Carrier pigeons and an abacus would have done a more compelling job of announcing DeSantis's presidency.
Yes.
Presidential run. But yeah, so Elon, fan of the right, Zuckerberg, boy, he's a favorite boogeyman of the right. He funds all these voting ballot drop boxes. Yeah, because that was legal. Thanks much. Three courts hold so. When we come back, we're going to talk about my other random favorite piece of news from the week, which just happened yesterday, which I think will be, earlier today. It'll be much fun to talk about that when we come back. Join us. Tell me what you want to talk back about. What did you hear on the radio or TV this week that had you screaming at your radio or TV? 844-967-2789. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on Civic Media.
Is it ever gonna be enough? 2.7 WMDX.
I'm Maggie Dawn, and this is The Maggie Dawn Show here on Civic Media. Go get the app if you haven't done so yet. It is so cool. I love using it. It's super simple. You can check out the whole Civic Media network, all the different stations that Sage and Mike have put together to bring what I would like to think is a fresh viewpoint to Wisconsin here on the radio. Radio accessible to all for free, for nothing, for zero. You don't have to have a subscription. And anybody can call us. Anybody can interface with us on the phones, via text, or in any of our socials. You can hit me up on the Facebook, Maggie Dawn Show, or on Twitter, at The Maggie Dawn Show. If you want to join us this afternoon, 844-967-2789. I say bring it on, the Musk Zuck showdown, and just hope that dirtbag Dana White doesn't make off like a bandit. I'm sure he will. But hey, if they give it all to charity, all the better.
Yeah,
Other sort of random piece of news that I wanted to talk about, kind of wonky, was that George Santos's bond guarantors became public just a few hours ago. So George Santos charged with some, I think, 17 federal criminal counts, including basically fraud with pandemic unemployment benefits, all sorts of nefarious things that, you know, a pathological liar would eventually get caught doing. But George Santos had been fighting since he was charged to keep these bond guarantors secret. Now, typically, they're public. And he was claiming that these folks would be harassed and subject to threats and all of these things. But the judge overseeing his criminal case, a woman by the name of Joanna Siebert, ordered just earlier this week that those guarantors were going to have to be made public as of today at noon. And it was really interesting because as this got closer and closer and it looked like the judge was going to order him to unseal these names, the rhetoric from George Santos and his lawyer started to get more hysterical. So it then became that George Santos was saying, or his lawyer was saying on his behalf, that if you required these bond guarantors to be unsealed, I would rather be held than have to reveal who these bond guarantors are. You know, this is what a pathological liar would do. I'll place myself at the center of it and sort of a victim role and, you know, put myself out there as if I'll be some hero and fall on my sword and, you know, take the heat rather than expose these wonderful people that support me and all of my pathological lying. Yeah, before I'll let their names be public, I'll go to jail.
That's valiant, very valiant.
Right. Well, it's not even a guess. Can you imagine what happened when noon o'clock was rolling around today? And like the court order was, they have to become public. Did George Santos and his lawyer show up and surrender himself to custody to protect those people that have stood up for him? No, of course he didn't. I mean, who are we talking about here?
Yeah.
So the two guarantors were revealed and his bond is something like $500,000. And just hang on a second here. So these two people, and by the way, there used to be three people. And when the court said, no, it's going to be public, apparently it went down to two. So now there's only two signatory guarantors on his bond. It's his dad and his aunt. Now, his bond is $500,000. Now, in most jurisdictions, you go to a bail bondsman and you give them 10%, and then they'll effectively vouch for the rest of it. Well, George Santos's folks, they didn't actually have to put up any of the actual money. There's zero real dollars. It's basically his dad and his aunt saying, if he doesn't show up, we'll owe the federal government $500,000. You want to talk about like rich and famous people and politicians getting treated differently? Well, that's one. I mean, it doesn't sit right with me. But what I found really interesting was what the judge had to say when she affirmed her ruling today. In her order, the judge, Joanna Siebert, said that Mr. Santos's own actions had encouraged the media frenzy surrounding his bond guarantors. She wrote that his efforts to shield his guarantors' identities, quote, notwithstanding the fact that he is aware of their identities and aware that their identities are not controversial, has simply created hysteria over what is, in actuality, a non-issue, end quote. The reason that this is interesting to me is that, of course, he's painting himself as this hero that he's going to go to jail. Of course, he doesn't do that. And he's been making all this stink in the media, like some terrible tragedy is going to befall these bond guarantors. And what the judge basically says here is, yes, George Santos is a pathological narcissist, likely liar. She's saying he created the hysterical environment. He created all of this attention. And why would you do that? Well, you know, sociopathy is difficult. And I think that that's pretty incredible that the judge is kind of calling him out about that. His statement was that he and his family had, quote, made peace with the judge's decision. It's really interesting because apparently his aunt has put down on various campaign contributions that she was a mail handler for the Postal Service. I don't know where a mail handler for the Postal Service is going to come up with half a mil or even a quarter of a mil. And his dad, whom his son has described as a Brazilian immigrant of Angolan descent, who also lives in Queens, said when he made donations that he worked as a painter or in construction or that he was retired. So, again, all I'm saying is, here are these two regular folks. One works for USPS and one was a construction painter guy, right? They don't have $500,000, but George Santos gets to walk out on bail. So, yeah, the justice system isn't equal. It isn't blind, and not everybody gets treated the same. Lock It In will be back in just a couple of minutes. We're going to talk about that Hunter Biden issue and, you know, whether or not the justice system works well. Keep it locked. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show. Join us 844-967-2789 here on Civic Media. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on Civic Media. Thanks to those joining us live on Facebook. Very cool. Fun to see you all there. You can join the party, the video stream, Maggie Dawn Show on Facebook. You can also tweet me at the Maggie Dawn Show. So I want to talk about the Hunter Biden deal. And basically, I want to get folks' impressions about our justice system, because we're in this really interesting moment, right? We have the right that's basically criticizing and has even used the language defund the FBI, defund those police, right?
Ironic, yeah.
Right. Criticizing the entire federal law enforcement apparatus. We've had revelations, you know, about the Secret Service in the last 6 years. We've got the Supreme Court's approval ratings have gone down over 20 points in a year, one of the most precipitous drops that we've ever witnessed. When we get into the state judicial systems, where most folks, if we have to tussle with law enforcement, we're in the state system. We've got folks on the left questioning the legitimacy of law enforcement and questioning, you know, should we be calling it the justice system? I in some circumstances, don't call it that. As a lawyer, this is a dispute resolution system that we've all arbitrarily agreed on, and there are different ways to do these things. And I think most people are under the illusion that all Western democracies use this same system or a close approximation thereof, when there's actually some significant variation in what you see in justice systems. And so then when we bring it down to these individual cases where we're talking about either Donald Trump, and there was just an absolutely disturbing Quinnipiac poll that came out this week about the Trump indictment for mishandling and retention of highly classified and sensitive documents, basically for putting our nation's security at risk. We've got that going on. We've got the Hunter Biden plea deal that happened this week. We've got these issues with George Santos. We have these yet completely evidentiarily unfounded, made up, crazy allegations about Joe Biden. We've got the Durham report that dropped, right, accusing the FBI of being political, but John Durham was hired by Trump to go. It's an extraordinary moment. And I can see that for someone who isn't a wonk and doesn't pay attention to this stuff all the time, that you could get kind of lost in this and come away with a sense that, like, hey, the justice system, our legal, our law enforcement apparatus, it's not working so well. I'm curious as to what everybody out there thinks. 844-967-2789. Feel free to text or call. But I thought, like, taking a pause to actually look at the Hunter Biden plea deal would be interesting. It's one of these many things that are going on in our country right now that really strikes at the heart of one of the key institutions of any democracy, and that is our system of laws. And so where are we? Now, so that we can all start from the same place, this week the Department of Justice announced a plea deal had been reached with Hunter Biden. It's a tentative agreement. The court papers were filed on Tuesday. He's going to plead guilty to two minor misdemeanor tax crimes and admit to the facts of a gun charge. He won't actually have a criminal conviction on the gun charge. There's going to be a diversion program. Specifically, what we're talking about here is that Hunter will plead guilty to for failing to pay more than $100,000 in taxes in both 2017 and 2018 after making more than $1.5 million each year. He's already paid the taxes owed, but he still committed the crime, right? And it looks like prosecutors are going to be recommending probation for up to 2 years on that tax charge. Now, the gun charge is the really interesting one. It's sort of a non-event as a criminal matter because he's not going to be convicted of this. But when you buy a gun, you're asked a series of questions, and one of them is, are you doing drugs? Because at least as a country, we can agree that we probably shouldn't sell weapons to people stoned out of their minds that have an active drug problem. Probably not a good idea. We got that part. That's a gun regulation we can stand behind. We could talk about that idea for the rest of the show.
We could too.
But right? I mean, that we can say, can't do that. In any case, he checked the box, no. And Hunter Biden later published a book, and in it he admitted to being addicted to some pretty serious drugs during the period of time that included the day that he bought the gun. Why did anybody ever find out that Hunter Biden bought the gun? Right? Like, you would have to do an intensive record search, and a lot of this stuff is in hard copy when you buy guns. Again, you think we can maybe use computers now? But what happened was someone close to Hunter Biden was so concerned at one point for his physical safety and that he might actually kill himself. That's the state that this man was in. That when they found out that he had a gun, they took it and they threw it in a trash can.
Yeah, his girlfriend at the time.
Correct. And someone found it in the trash can. Because the gun was registered, they eventually figured out it was his and that he had bought this gun while he was addicted to all these drugs. So unquestionably, he was addicted to drugs and checked the box, no, I'm not doing drugs, when he bought the gun, which was a lie, and that's a federal crime.
Yes.
So he's not going to take a federal criminal penalty on that or be convicted of any federal crime on that. He's agreed to a diversion program. Typically, diversion programs are done when someone has committed a crime that hasn't caused any harm to anyone else due to mental illness or addiction. So instead of incarcerating people or even putting them under some kind of criminal probation, which has significant restrictions on how you can live your life, hey, let's get these folks some help and hopefully they won't touch the criminal justice system again. Or as I like to say, the dispute resolution mechanism that we've all arbitrarily agreed is how we're going to do that. So that's what happened with these charges. Now, how do we even end up here, right? Like, that's sort of the real question. So here's a couple of interesting factoids. First of all, the federal investigation into Hunter Biden was opened during the Obama administration. Okay, so I'm going to take a big pause there and say it again so everybody can hear me way in the back. The federal investigation for tax evasion into Hunter Biden was opened during the Obama administration. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all those claims of bias and all that nonsense. While the guy's dad was vice president, the FBI opened an investigation into his son. Now, I ask you all, for being truthful here, would Donald Trump have allowed Bill Barr to open an investigation into Donald Trump Jr.? No. Here's the factual predicate, and this is why conservatives are so up in arms about all this. These charges grew out of this years-long investigation because Hunter Biden was paid extraordinarily well by a bunch of foreign business interests in Ukraine, China, and Kazakhstan. And there have long been lots of ethical questions about that. To wit, does Hunter Biden get paid all these millions of dollars to do whatever sort of consulting work in Kazakhstan if his dad's not vice president? Nope, probably not. Now, I ask you in the next breath, does Jared Kushner get given, does he get, what was it, $20 billion?
It was, yeah, $2 billion from the Saudis to sort of manage these funds to manage. And then he got.
That's what he's going to make.
Yeah. Oh.
Is the $2 billion. Somebody fact check us on this. But he got a crap load of money from Saudi Arabia's sovereign wealth fund. Literally, I think it was like 60 days after Trump was out of the White House. Ostensibly to run a private equity fund, which, by the way, Jared Kushner has no experience doing, has never been in that business, has never really invested other people's money.
And that's what it was, too. His private equity firm received $2 billion from the Saudis. $2 billion. And it was something like 1% is what I'm seeing here.
Yes, which I think means he makes like $200 million, even if he loses money, right? Wonderful.
But it's no big deal. No big deal.
Yeah, nothing to see here. So is it, are these things ethically problematic? Yes, of course it is. Is Donald Trump son-in-law getting that money ethically problematic? Sure it is. Is Donald Trump, requiring the Secret Service and his entire entourage to stay in Trump-owned hotels and properties while he's president? Of course it is. But the hysteria here is part of what seems to me to be problematic. I just don't get it. And they go on and on about this. And it's been going on since the Obama administration. And this man had this very serious drug addiction. His brother died. He got divorced. I mean, it was very clear that Hunter Biden, very screwed up guy. But this personal drama, yeah, that's been known for a while. Then, Republicans trying to get the Hunter Biden laptop and the guy took some nude selfies. I mean, all very awkward and ick. But being a screw up and frankly trading on your famous dad's name, yeah, those things aren't crimes. They're not crimes. And certainly there are ethically dubious analogies that could probably be made with any number of presidents.
Absolutely.
Right? So the idea that this is somehow some vast cover-up, it's like, no. The federal law enforcement arm started investigating this guy when his dad was in the second biggest chair in the country. And Republicans keep intimating that somehow Joe Biden got paid off or that he was leveraging his influence. And yet there has not been a single scintilla of evidence supporting any of that.
What really disturbs me about it is that they're using this situation as an excuse for why Donald Trump should not be persecuted, prosecuted, whatever word you want to use. When at the end of the day, even if our justice system isn't perfect, somebody isn't prosecuted to the full, extent that they should be, that doesn't mean that people who break the law should not be punished.
And my point is the justice system works imperfectly in almost every case. Every case is some imperfect, sometimes immeasured, unfair, biased, racist, genderist, what we like rich people more than poor. This is the way the system works. And for folks to stand around now, particularly on the right, and act as if there's some big shock here, it's just beyond the pale to me. I mean, during Durham's testimony this week, I mean, first of all, let's be clear. He admitted under questioning that the FBI fairly opened an investigation into the Ukraine pressure. Basically said he agreed that Russia interfered with the 2016 election and agreed that Donald Trump willingly accepted their interference into the election, as well as a lot of other juicy bits. But like in the Durham testimony, Jim Jordan goes off on FISA courts, right? Guess who used to be the most vehemently opposed to FISA courts? These are these foreign intelligence, like nobody knows that the warrants are issued. Russ Feingold, Senator Russ Feingold from Wisconsin, was terrified of these things, okay? And now that's a Republican talking for? Give me a break. Listen, we got one more second to chop it up on this Talk Back Thursday. What is the bee in your bonnet? Call me 844-967-2789. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show. They got help from below, from dirty ponds and the creatures of snow.
.7 WMDX.
It is Thursday Talk Back here on The Maggie Dawn Show. If there was something in the news today that made you stand up and scream at your TV, call me, 844-967-2789. What was it?
Yeah, we've got Bill from Waukesha.
Awesome. Bill from Waukesha, what was the bee in your bonnet this past week?
Well, hi, Maggie. I enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I'd like to say about what you were talking about with Biden's son. One thing that the people are missing is that he may have been paying his taxes in portions, and the amount got so big that he got into trouble if he missed the payment or something like that. But like you said, the other stuff isn't really, illegal, what he did. And then also you've been talking about Donald Trump. When the police came around his house for those papers, I always thought that a president or it was decided a person that runs a company like a CEO can have those papers for a while after they're not in charge. Is that true or not?
No. So there's a very big difference between national security secrets that are classified as well as compartmentalized information, which there's a specific process that has to be used to declassify that information. Otherwise, it needs to be maintained in a certain way, which means secured. And so having it in the shower stall of a luxury bathroom in a golf resort doesn't count, right? And that's part of the problem. The other thing I'll just briefly say, because your question's so interesting, thanks so much for calling and listening, Bill. I appreciate you. Was your question about do CEOs, is there some equivalent when CEOs or corporate executives in the private sector leave? And very interesting enough, there are oftentimes very specific provisions in these employment agreements that deals with how company property, which includes basically everything that you produce at work, has to be handled in the event of an executive's departure. And in fact, it can get quite sticky when there's certain intellectual property involved. But even in the case of the private sector, those papers aren't the CEOs, they're the companies. And that's the company's property. Think of it this way, right? If you are at work, especially probably the closest analogy is some sort of white collar job, you don't pack up all the papers like your work reports and take them with you. That's owned by your company. You don't take their algorithm that runs their entire new social media app.
It's theft.
And leave with it. You can't do that, right? Like, that's what, you know, Iran's nuclear war plans are, folks. And he was showing them to journalists. The other thing that I want to mention about the Hunter Biden investigation started again under Obama at the FBI. And then when the special prosecutor was assigned by Trump, a guy by the name of David Weiss in Delaware, when Joe Biden became president, he didn't remove that guy from his post and put in a loyalist. He left him in place and said, finish investigating my son. Now, I don't have in front of me the long list of U.S. attorneys that Donald Trump forced out because they weren't personally loyal. So I ask you, right? Is there, seems to be some false equivalencies going on here. Yeah. In any case, we left it talking about these FISA warrants that Jim Jordan is now complaining about. Well, that's rich coming from the right now. You know, it was Russ Feingold, a lone Democrat, Senate Democrat, who objected to the Patriot Act, specifically referenced these FISA warrants and the FISA courts as being antithetical to civil liberties. And now here, the right has found their way. Oh, it's about Donald Trump. Well, then they must be problematic. However, it's just fine for all of us regular folk. I mean, come on. So here's my takeaway on all of this is, yeah, this isn't a justice system. Yeah, the laws are not enforced or investigated equally. Guess what? They never have been. Because human beings do these jobs. And when these cases get into court, or a lawyer is advising a client when criminal charges are pending against them, what we talk about in this country is evidence. Okay? Evidence here matters. It matters a lot. It's in a courtroom where you show it or you shove it. This isn't, let's just make stuff up and see what people will believe. Human beings do this work. All of us have different opinions. But the charges, the crimes, they are tested in courtrooms based on evidence. And people don't plead to crimes if there isn't evidence of wrongdoing. So I say to the GOP about Joe Biden, show it or shove it, because I'm tired of hearing about it. You got more on Hunter Biden? Show it or shove it. Because guess what's going to happen with Donald Trump? We're about to see it in a courtroom every day. Jack Smith is going to show it. And if he is able to obtain a conviction in that jurisdiction, there can be no reasonable argument of Donald Trump's guilt. That's what I'd like to be asking leaders in the GOP. If Donald Trump is convicted of these crimes before a jury of his peers in South Florida, in one of the richest districts from where you can draw jurors, a highly Republican district, if he's convicted by a jury, will you finally admit his guilt? What then? If he's convicted, is he fit to be president? Because listen, we might have 82-year-old Joe Biden running for president, but that man works out 5 days a week. What we also might have is a convict. It is possible a man facing criminal charges of basically betraying this country's most sensitive information will be facing the prospect of a jury trial that could render him guilty of such crimes while sitting as president of these United States. That is a possibility that every Republican who does not repudiate Donald Trump right now is telling you is just fine. I don't know about you, but I think that is a little screwed up. That'll close it out for me this week on The Maggie Dawn Show. Thank you so much for listening. My big thanks to Evan Preston, my partner in crime. And to, again, thanks to all of you for tuning in. I'll be back next week, Monday, live on Facebook if you want to see me talk. And, of course, on your radio waves here on Civic Media. Y'all take care now.